All right, you're back in the DFSR. It's an NFL podcast. It's Thursday, January 10th. I'm Doug Norrie. That is
James Davis.
And we are here talking the divisional round of football for the weekend, FanDuel and DraftKings, breaking down the four games. What looks to be a pretty exciting, at least from an offensive perspective, slate of games. Last week was kind of not a slog. The games ended up being interesting, but they were definitely more, I guess we'd say, defensively sound. That does not look like it's the case this weekend. When you just took an initial look on this, I mean, we looked at it kind of a bird's eye view last week compared to this week. Do you get more excited when you see like this many offensive options? Because we were in a situation last week when we went game by game where we were thinking, I mean, what are we going to do here? We're going to play like a $3,000 guy who doesn't even see any targets because there's seven total relevant offensive players. Like, that doesn't seem to be the case this weekend. Like, what was your sort of bird's eye view of the slate in general? We'll get into the game by game in a second here. But
my main focus was the Sunday slate. The Sunday slate is a lot more inviting than last week's Sunday slate. Last week, and potentially this was a happy accident, but you had a lot of teams playing last week that were kind of good at like a phase of the game, but maybe not every phase of the game. So I'll put Chicago in that category. Seattle, I think, falls in that category as well. There was Baltimore, there's just a lot of teams that, and the thing that a lot of those teams are good at is playing defense, which also makes DFS sure. plays annoying. So now that we can get away from a lot of those boring teams and just the teams that are really good at offense and only okay at defense, it makes things a lot easier. So
yeah, like last week there was eight teams played, and almost all of them I think ranked in the top 10 of DVOA and defense, if I'm looking at this right. Chicago, Baltimore, six of them, Houston, Chargers, Dallas, Indy. Yeah, six of the eight were in the top 10 DVOA defenses. Now some carry over, obviously Dallas is coming in this weekend, the Chargers as well, and Indy, but on the other side of it, we're getting the Rams, we're getting the Chiefs, obviously, we're getting the Saints, teams that just actually can't.
Yeah, there's some polarized defenses. Like, I was noticing this as I was looking at the slate, where the Saints actually were excellent in terms of yards per carry allowed on the ground this season. You were going to play the Eagles run game anyway. And like New England was actually quite good against the pass on a yards per attempt basis, but they were terrible against the run. So, there's some nuance to it. And you can't just zoom out and be like, hey, they're a top 13 defense. That doesn't tell the whole story. But yeah, I mean, by and large, there are gaps. There are things you can exploit. And that is exciting because last week it didn't feel like there were any.
Well, let's start with the team. Let's start with the Chiefs here, because they're the first game. The Colts go in and play the Chiefs. Chiefs are 5-point home favorites with a 57 over-under, easily the highest of the slate. The next highest one is a 51. So the points are expected to come early and often in this game. The line did start at -6, I think, started at -6 in the Chiefs. Has come down a little bit. But timing-wise, we had to talk about this team at first anyway. But we rolling in from the defensive idea that the Chiefs defense is, I mean, one of the worst defenses to make it this far into the, like, to be like a bye team and like with Super Bowl aspirations. Their defense is right now, the end of the season, 26th in DVOA and 32nd against the rush. And I think the rush thing is actually particularly interesting because this is a team that was blowing teams out. The other teams didn't have the ability to really run against them for much of the season because they were typically just losing by so much.
This is actually an issue or a question I have, because I was looking at this too, and I was looking at the New England rush defense as well. And I wonder how much of that is like, when the other team isn't supposed to be running, obviously, like, you're going to give them more in the running game because you're like, well, you're down by 13, dude. You're going to run? Go ahead. Get six yards. Who cares? Keep running that clock, because three of the bottom four teams in terms of yards per attempt allowed are teams that were involved in a lot of one-sided games. New England, fourth worst. Kansas City, second worst. And the Rams were the worst in terms of yards per attempt allowed on the ground. So that's just the question I have, is like, when the game is on the line, like, are they better? Are they worse? I haven't actually gone in and done the research on this yet, but that's at least a question I'm asking myself right now.
Yeah, I think it's a fair question. I think that this kind of thing really, really matters in terms of why were the teams getting what they were going to do. I suspect that the truth lies just somewhere in the middle, right? Like, are they the worst, one of the worst rush defenses in the world if every game lined up with the same exact script? And probably not, right? It's if you're a competent defense or a very good defense, just by sheer talent, you wouldn't rank 32nd in the league against the rush, right? Even if you were just allowing these late game rushes because the games were over or whatever it ends up being. So I think that's probably two much of a rabbit hole to get down into even before like these games start. And I will say that they're probably not the 32nd ranked rushing defense in the league. And I think if they were trying their absolute hardest, what's the best they could be? League average? I'm just not sure. So from a DFS perspective, or at least from our system, in terms of all weekend and obviously Saturday only, it just doesn't see any reason to fade Mahomes here. He's the most expensive guy. He's 9,000 on FanDuel. I think he's like in the same price range on DraftKings. He's 7,000 on DraftKings. That's 1,400 more. No, it's 800 more than guys like Andrew Luck in the same game. It's only 300 more than Breeze. But do you see a reason to fade Mahomes? I guess on a short slate with Luck, the other quarterbacks, obviously Luck, Prescott, and Goff. And then, you know, you looked at the Sunday quarterbacks, which really, I mean, Brady, Breeze, and Rivers. I guess Foles, too, for the price. Do you see any reason to fade Mahomes here? Our system's like, look, find your savings somewhere else. Just go with the guy who's thrown for just an unbelievable amount of touchdowns and yards this season.
Yeah, it's going to all come down to, well, so there's a lot going on, right? So on a four-game slate or a two-game slate, depending on whether you're playing just Saturday or you're playing the whole weekend, you obviously got very limited choices. So even when we're looking at, like, this is back to the defensive question, too. You don't need to be the very worst rushing defense in the league on a slate like this in order for guys to be playable against you. Like, just the juxtaposition of, okay, these three teams are terrible against the run, this team is like not so bad against the run, all the particulars after that kind of don't matter quite as much. And I view Mahomes the same way, that you're basically choosing between Mahomes, like on the Saturday slate, you're picking between Mahomes and a solid matchup with Indy. Sounds great. Goff, no. Dak Prescott, I would hope not, you know, these days. I'd rather not. And then you have Luck, and he's got a good matchup. So it's really the Mahomes or Luck question. And given that Mahomes is just $500 more expensive, even that seems pretty straightforward to me, right? I mean, we talked about this going into week 17, but Mahomes led all quarterbacks in the league by 5 fantasy points per game. Like, that's insane. And if you're assuming, and that was over Roethlisberger, who was second, the gap is even wider between him and Luck. And paying just $500 more for 5 more fantasy points a game in the best case scenario is just an absolute no-brainer. That's 10x points per dollar, right? So I'm gonna play Mahomes if I can. You know, it's tricky. I don't want to talk out of turn because it might not be worth it if it means you have to play some receiver who gets 2 targets a game, but especially on the 2-day slate, that doesn't seem to be the case.
I think the pricing is pretty soft here, all things considered. Definitely very soft on DraftKings. The pricing is, you're not in any kind of crunch. It's almost comical. Like, for football, we usually don't typically see huge spread differences in these short slates. Like, you know, there's usually some very minor decision to be made among, like, maybe a $5,000 receiver or something like that. And you'll see projected lineup scores to be within, you know, 10th or 20th of a point or something like that. Right now, the difference on FanDuel, on DraftKings lineup 1 to lineup 2 is a difference of a point, a full point and a half. And that is a massive difference, which just, and usually just speaks to, look, these guys are so soft that the pricing is so soft that there's really no other decisions to be made. The only decision to, I'm going to roll into the next decision. I don't want your opinion on, but I will say, I'm going to cap this off by saying, for me, there's absolutely no reason to fade Mahomes here. I don't want to go down to Luck. I don't think you're getting a requisite payoff compared to what these two guys can do. Now, the question I think I have the most is, with this KC running game, what is to be done here? Because the last few weeks, they rolled out Damian Williams into the scheme because they were without Spencer Ware. Williams was very good. It's another one of these, like, Kareem Hunt who kind of situations. Like, it just, like, maybe this doesn't matter who this Kansas City running back is. They're just going to average their 4.5 yards per carry and get their goal line touches. He touched the ball 11, 13, 10 times, 4.6 yards a carry, 7.9 yards a carry, 4.9 yards a carry in the lead back roles. But Spencer Ware is back. Is the Spencer Ware back being practicing and could be around enough to ding Williams, or do you think we saw enough from Williams that they just say, hey man, this guy, by the way, had a million tons of targets also. Like, he had 7 catches and 6 catch games in that 3-week span. I feel like I just want to kind of roll Williams as a running back 1 and just say, I'll live with the risk if they kind of end up splitting carries with Ware. Like, where do you kind of land on that? I did more research on this than you did, but I'm wondering if you have a gut feeling about what happens when we get a guy like Spencer Ware back into the mix.
My gut feeling is that I'd rather not, to be honest. Like, interesting. I think Williams, well, I mean, you just look at the track record of Williams. Yeah, there were touches there, but like 12 touches, 20 touches, great against Seattle, and 16 touches, that's like not already, like, I mean, it's 6,100 on FanDuel, like, whatever, that's totally serviceable on a small slate. But bringing Ware back into the mix, I personally believe that they're going to split time, and I don't, you know, again, I haven't actually looked at, especially the Saturday and the Sunday slate, nearly as much as you have. And especially if he like slides into the flex slot, like I like Williams a heck of a lot more than I like, I don't know, Josh Reynolds or Michael Gallup, you know.
Assume everything I'm talking about is here relative to his price and relative to the rest of the field. Like
I know, but I'm saying, I guess, like, I'm just trying to say, I'm trying to give additional context for people who aren't used to playing slates this small, because I think a lot of people just roll up, they play the main slate, they move on with their life. Williams is a playable option, and I think there's room for downside. That's all.
Yeah, I think I'm monitoring the situation with where practicing it and whatnot. I would love for someone to, like some reporter to come out and say, oh, Spencer Ware is just going to take over lead back roles. He's 400 more than Williams. I think that we'd find a way to work that. Like right now, Williams is in 100% of the lineups at 6,100 on FanDuel, and I believe it's the same case on DraftKings as well, as I click over there. Yeah, 88%, he's 4,900. I'm hoping to get some kind of word about, you know, who was taking first team reps in practice, if they even have access to it. I'm not really sure, you know, what goes into playoff reporting at this point. Like I said, Ware has had the injury concern, has missed multiple weeks. I think that does not help his case. And I think if I'm willing to take a risk on a running back this week, if we had no news going from now until Saturday, Ware is limited to practice. If there was no more news, like if this last note on Ware was limited in practice or whatever, I think I would probably say I'm willing to risk Damian Williams in cash. And if Ware started the game and played, you know, every snap or 75% of the snaps, and I would just take my lumps with it. I think that's kind of where I'm landing, and I'm mostly just going with like the hot hand, fully healthy, no worries about health, all that kind of thing.
Sure.
I think that's where I'm going to. And by the way, I'm only doing this because it's a small slate. The options are limited. Once you get away from him, you are looking at secondary wide receiver kind of guys. It's just, you know, a second tight end kind of stuff like this. Like the other options are not all that appealing. Then I, you know, just to roll through the rest of these KC guys, I kind of dipped down Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce with Sammy Watkins coming back. I'm not sure. In the past weeks, I've been fine prioritizing those two guys. The fact that they're a little healthier in the past game, and the fact that actually Williams has been such a great pass catcher out of the backfield, is that enough to maybe possibly fade those, even maybe possibly just fade two of them in cash games? Right now on FanDuel, it's saying just fade the KC wide receiver group altogether. Would that make you uncomfortable? Understanding that we're paying a lot more for them relative maybe to the rest of the field.
Yeah, I think that's really where it comes down to for me. Like Hill and Kelce were already on the expensive end for guys. You know, like I think Kelce you could potentially make a case for just because I think he is a really, really strong tight end option. And I don't think Watkins should eat into his target share in the same way that he should eat into Hill's. Hill, I'd rather not play for sure. I mean, you made the very compelling case when Watkins went down for playing Hill, that they were kind of sharing roles and targets and that kind of thing. And I think now Hill's price is based on his performance with Watkins out of the mix. It's actually even more expensive than it has been. You know, we were paying mid to high 7,000s for Hill, so now we're actually seeing a price increase in what amounts to a worse situation. I have no problem fading that passing game altogether if need be. And like, even if I just went with Kelce or something like that, if I had to stack Mahomes with somebody, it'd probably be Kelce, I guess is what I'll say.
On the Indy side, we've talked about Luck, and I think, you know, we put Luck probably as the second best quarterback on the slate after Mahomes, but I have the gap as pretty far between those two guys. Then I wrote up Marlon Mack, mostly as a Saturday only option. There's just really no other running backs. If you look at these four teams, and I'm going to get to the Zeke Gurley debate in a second, but Mack is coming. It's solidly in the middle tier, 7,400. The guy's got 20 carry upside if things are going well for the Colts, which you've seen multiple times over the last few weeks. We've mentioned that the DVOA on the Chiefs defense is bad. Is that enough to? And we also just only usually like playing running backs that are huge underdogs, although we just might be out of options here. Would you be comfortable rolling Mack in cash games? Right now he's coming in basically 100% of the lineups, mostly just on the Chiefs defense and the fact that he is just Indy's lead one back with really no one else in question or kind of eating into his time.
Yeah, I think so. Again, if I'm just comparing him against the other options that I have available to me, a lot of the other good backs on, especially the Saturday only slate, have similar issues that, you know, that we don't like anyway, right? So, like, you could say, well, you don't love him in a game where he's a 5.5-point underdog, and you could be true, but then you have Zeke as a 7-point underdog going up against the Rams, right? So you have a good matchup against the Chiefs. I mean, the Chiefs, they're going to be in a running back by committee situation. I think I'd prefer Mack to either member of their committee if that were the decision. Obviously, given that you can play three or play Williams on the flex, it gets a little closer. And then you head on over to the Sunday running backs, and it doesn't get a whole lot more clear. I mean, we'll talk about Melvin Gordon, who I like this weekend, but New England, RBBC, Philly, RBBC, and then the Saints, I like Kamara, but also there's more than one mouth to feed there too. So I think from that standpoint, Mac does bring a level of security. Also compared to the price, he's the cheapest of those, you know, higher end running backs. And for that reason, yeah, I'd be totally fine with him being in our cash game lineups.
He played 57 of the 72 snaps. Naheem Himes was a very popular, I mean, relatively speaking, popular cash game play last week at something like 35 to 40% ownership. He only had 9 snaps, didn't touch the ball at all. It'd be interesting to see where people go back on him, because they also like didn't need to get into that sort of passing game, which is his specialty, right? It's like his specialty is catching balls out of the backfield. He's not going to be the ground and pound kind of runner that Mac is. If they fell down early, I think you're going to see like half the ownership on Hines that you saw last week. And I wouldn't advocate it from a cash gameplay, probably just because the 9 snaps really does have me a little bit worried. But if you want some GP upside on a guy who definitely has it, especially like what, they fall down 2 scores early, like he might come into an even snap share with Marlon Mack if they feel like they need to play catch up. So take a look at that. Take a look at Hines. Hilton, obviously, just still has great double-digit upside. He saw 10 targets last week. He only converted from 5 to 85. But again, if you think that this is a game where they're going to need to start airing it out a lot, Hilton, probably. I mean, would you rather play Tyreek Hill or T.Y. Hilton? If you didn't even have to factor price, Hilton's cheaper. But do you have a gut feeling about, you know, from a cash game safety perspective, who you like better out of those two guys?
Yeah, I'll take Hilton. I mean, I'm not concerned at all about the injury stuff. You know, he was supposedly injured last week too, and he came out and had 10 targets against Houston. He's like the only playmaker of his kind on that Indy offense, and I just think he's like Luck's security blanket and his deep threat. For me, it's not even close. I like Hilton a lot more than Hill.
Yeah, interesting. I think I do too. Obviously, you know, Tyreek Hill's targets are worth a little bit more than Hilton's just because of the explosiveness, and you know they will use him in the run game a little bit on those jet sweep kind of stuff. But we have Hill projected for slightly more points, but I think you're getting enough savings. The $600 to $700 savings you get on Hilton does make a difference in these small slates. All right, let's get into the Dallas and Los Angeles game. The Rams are 7-point home favorites here. This game has a 50 over-under. That's the third highest of the weekend. But the Rams are the second biggest favorites. The Saints are 8-point favorites on Sunday. Todd Gurley is back, I think, right? So, like, he is right. He has not played for almost a month now. If you go back to the pre-injury stuff, they had C.J. Anderson there for the last couple weeks, and they had the bye last week as well. I don't know what to, I really just don't know what to do with Todd Gurley here in terms of carries, because like from the 7-point home favorite and the way the Rams use their running backs would say, oh, he is just easily the guy to play, except he's had injuries and hasn't played in a really long time. I kind of wrote up him and Zeke together because Zeke
and C.J. Anderson, by the way, was awesome when Gurley was out too. So like, I think there's a reasonable question of, could they potentially split some carries or give Anderson 8 carries or something instead of Gurley all 30, you know?
Yeah, and the Rams don't, you know, the Rams are kind of like the Steelers like this. And the,
yeah, I know.
And not the Chiefs as much, but although the Chiefs lately have kind of sort of been pressed into having to do this. But they seem to be very much like that. This is our running back and he's our running back, and that's just it, right? If you're healthy and you're the running back, you're just the running back. Don't worry about splitting time with anybody. And I just wonder, are there enough scenarios where the Rams don't either? Are there enough scenarios in this game that the Rams just don't have to press Gurley into a 25 touch game, right? Like between the carries and the targets, or I don't know, man. This is really, really close for me. We have Gurley at about 2 points more than Elliott. A lot of that is coming from the Vegas home favorite piece of it. Like from an opportunity standpoint, we have them about the same. Do you have a gut call here on who to roll in cash games? Because we've seen Zeke just be great. Does game script be damned? Like, it doesn't really matter for him. There's no question that Zeke is going to get every single running back snap for the Colts this week. For the Cowboys. So where do we land here? Is it worth to just take the savings on Zeke and say there's just enough? Like, there's enough safety in that. I'm really torn on this. By the way, actually, I take that back. Zeke is a little bit more expensive on DraftKings. He's 500 more on DraftKings, and Gurley is 400 more on FanDuel. So you can, I don't know, maybe you hedge it between those two sites. What are your thoughts here on these running backs?
Yeah, you could consider hedging. I think I like Zeke. If Gurley's question or his status is in question at all. Right now, it looks like he's headed for like a questionable tag, I would guess. And I think if he rolls into Sunday with that or Saturday with that tag, then I think you can just take Zeke. I mean, I get that. Like, it's one of those situations we kind of run into this with basketball sometimes too, where it's like, if everything is perfect, you're going to want Gurley here, right? Yeah. Like, if everything, and that would be in his favor, and it would be like, what's the, this is a Nate Silver term I heard one time. Oh, I know what it was. Close but clear, you know? And I think that's a really helpful, because people get very carried away with hyperbole. I think if they were both healthy, it would be Gurley and it would be close, but it would be clear that you would go with him. I think given that Gurley has the questionable tag around him, given that it's kind of close already, you can probably go with the safety of Elliott and probably feel pretty good about it. One thing Elliott doesn't really have as you go down his game log is that game where he absolutely kills you. Like, even when the Cowboys stink, Elliott is still going to have 20 plus touches. And if the Cowboys happen to be good and surprise people here, 30 like he had against Seattle is definitely not out of the question. So, yeah, I don't know. I might be talking myself into some more Zeke here.
Yeah, that's basically, I think, where I landed from, like, mentally. Now, I will say, you know, to follow up on your point about what happens to Zeke in games where the Cowboys aren't that good, in the 23-0 loss to the Colts, he touched the ball 25 times. In the 14-point loss to the Titans, he touched the ball 21 times. I'm not even doing targets. These are just, like, you know, times he caught the ball. Then he had a 17-touch game against Washington. That game had some weirdness around it. And then you get to go all the way back to the beginning of the season where they were losing games. And he's still really, I mean, 19, 18 touches is the absolute floor for Zeke, right? The big change being this season, how much he's catching the ball out of the backfield. I think the more I talk it out, I think I'm probably willing to just say it is Elliott for me, because there's just, like you said, there's just almost no way he kills you. From the pass game perspective, Cooper and Gallup, you're just not going to get efficient targets from Dak. There's no other way around it. Like, he's just, these guys, yep, between how, like, their profile as pass catchers and what you're getting from the quarterback, who just doesn't have a dynamic arm and isn't going to make some, you know, all the big time throws. How comfortable do you feel rolling either of these guys? Gallup saw some targets, caught a touchdown, catches half his targets. I mean, Cooper did catch 7 for 106 last week. Thoughts here on the pass game, I'll nod to Blake Jarwin here in a second, but what do you feel about the receivers?
Yeah, so Gallup now two straight weeks where the Cowboys are probably playing their plan, had 6 targets in each game at the sub $6,000 price tag on FanDuel. It's the kind of thing you can do, you know, like, it's, we are in the playoffs, and that means sometimes having to be in uncomfortable situations. I will say, I think Cooper, if you can pay up a little bit more, seems to be much safer to me. 20 total targets in the last 2 weeks after a couple of down weeks. But we saw this with the Cowboys earlier this season, that their first plan in the passing game is to establish Cooper. Sometimes it doesn't work out and they have to get away from it a little bit, but I think they will start by trying to do that. And for all Cooper's troubled past, like, he has been a relatively efficient target. You know, he was fairly bad against the Giants in terms of turning targets into receptions. But outside of that, you know, 7 of 9, 4 of 5, 4 of 7, 10 of 13, 8 of 8, 8 of 9, just generally pretty good. So I like Cooper a lot more. He's more expensive. You know, we obviously always have to take price into consideration, but I do think Gallup would be playable if you needed him.
Jarwin was out-snapped by Dalton Schultz last week, but Schultz didn't see any targets. It feels like Schultz was more in there on run packages, and Jarwin was in there more on pass packages. Only 3 targets, so you're not going to have a huge game most likely out of him. And probably, you know, if you don't want to go the Kelsey and Ebron route, I would go to Jarwin next as a slight savings. The savings is a little bit easier to stomach on DraftKings. And by the way, I didn't even mention the DraftKings pricing on these Rams receivers is kind of just a joke. Robert Woods is 5,600. Okay, Brandon Cooks is 5,200. I just don't, these prices almost seem wrong. I was sort of just shocked when I saw it. Like, Woods, for all you want to say about Woods and maybe some inconsistency and maybe he's not getting the double-digit targets we thought, he doesn't need it at 5,600. The guy still led the team in targets since Cooper Kupp went down by a reasonable margin. As far as I'm concerned, in terms of pricing, I'm fine. I'm just going to stack Woods and Cooks on DraftKings, at least for cash, and then probably just go Josh Reynolds on FanDuel where he's only 5,600, and he out-targeted Cooks over the last 4 weeks of the season. So, thoughts here? Like, do you like that hedge? Like, maybe just, it's a little harder to get there on FanDuel where the pricing seems to be a little bit tighter, but does it seem like a reasonable move to just go Reynolds on FanDuel and the Cooks Woods route on DraftKings, just the way the prices sort of line up here?
Yeah, that sounds good to me. I think Reynolds, the interesting thing about Reynolds to me as well is, like, the fact that he's used in the red zone pretty frequently. He's targeted so much less than a lot of these guys, but, like, he had 2 touchdowns against San Francisco on just 7 targets. So, you know, he won't sustain that level of rate, but I think, you know, as you're trying to construct your whole lineup and figure out what level of risk you're willing to take on where, like, if I had to decide between Reynolds and Gallup, let's say, I'd be happy to take him. And yeah, on DraftKings, I think the Cooks-Woods pairing just given the price tag, is very reasonable, especially because I think either of those guys could actually wind up chipping in from the PPR perspective too. So especially, you know, if Gurley is banged up or they need to hedge just a littlest bit. All of that to say, I basically agree with your take.
Yeah. I think that's kind of where I end up landing. Let's move on to the Sunday games. Chargers go in and play the Patriots. Patriots are 4-point home favorites here. You know, that's sometimes where we want to land our running backs, but you mentioned the RBBC being something of an issue. And then we can talk a little bit about the passing game here where Chris Hogan just, you know, I don't know, did he like eclipse his entire season over the last like week or something like that? Like in terms of what he saw in the pass game once Josh Gordon had been essentially released from the team. Give me your, you looked into this slate a little bit more than I did. Give me some of your just kind of overall thoughts on this game and where you're looking from a fantasy perspective.
Yeah, so I think for starters, you mentioned the Patriots. We can start there. You know, this is going to be different if you take the whole weekend versus just the Sunday slate. So to start, I'll focus on just the Sunday slate because I don't think a lot of these guys are going to show up on your whole weekend slate, maybe with a couple of exceptions. But on the Patriots side, I think the first guy I would love to look at is just Julian Edelman. I think Edelman is kind of one of the best receivers going this weekend, and I'm curious to ultimately get your take on playing, you know, choosing between him and like say T.Y. Hilton. But basically, since Gordon went down, Edelman has been very clearly established as the wide receiver one here, and Gronk just pretty obviously passed his prime. In the last 4 weeks, Edelman had, well, three straight weeks with 10 targets or more, and then they absolutely throttled the Jets, and the game was over before it started, and he still had six targets that he turned into 69 yards and a touchdown. He's their premier red zone threat right now. Edelman at just 7,600 on FanDuel also kind of feels like, especially for that Sunday slate, feels like in that mistake category or maybe just in the must play category, because I think he's bringing a floor. Again, if you just go team by team here, there are so many teams with either too many options or too few options. Right. And I think Edelman's in that sweet spot of like, it's like a rich man's Keenan Allen, frankly. Like, he's going to get the targets. He's going to get the red zone looks. The Patriots completely rely on him right now. It's really hard to see him going missing in this game.
Yeah, I agree. Double-digit targets seem like it's going to be the plan. I think that if anything, you'll see the ball not forced to him, but that this is, if they're going to establish him as like, you know, again, the short passes, is sort of the run for them. Now, they've been more inclined to run, especially with guys like Sonny Michel around, where if the guy actually, if he steps on the field, you can just basically, I don't know, stack the box. They're just going to run. Seems like that's what they do in all of his snaps. But Edelman, yeah, it'd be funny about where we land. If we're just talking about Sunday only, in terms of safety, you get a $700 savings on him between him and Mike Thomas. Mike Thomas has just such a good matchup here against the Eagles. I don't know. Do you think you get enough savings? I guess that's more the question I have. Do you think you get enough savings on Edelman to basically essentially fade Michael Thomas? $1,700 on DraftKings is a big difference. It's a little closer on FanDuel. Do you think you get enough of a savings on Edelman? Because that's really the only question. Is the savings enough to warrant not playing Michael Thomas if you need to go expensive at some of the other positions?
I think Thomas is risky, just straight up. Like, you can look at the last month or two of his game scripts, and you've got some, you know, let's just do it this way. In the last six out of the last eight games, is that right? Four out of the last six, he has fewer than 10 fantasy points. Like, that's awful for a guy who's 8,400. He's a good receiver. Throwing to Michael Thomas is a good plan for the Saints, and they just don't need to. They have a lot of other options, and if he's just not the guy they're keying in on this week, you could easily see a replication of, you know, the even just seven catches for 50 yards. Like, he's got tons of games like that over the course of the season. And yes, he's got huge upside. He's got a lot of touchdowns. When things are clicking and he is the guy, the chosen one for the week, he can absolutely go off, and he just might not be. So I think if I'm just talking about strictly cash games, I really do like the floor of Edelman and the savings because, you know, again, we're talking about weeks where we're basically playing afterthoughts in our cash games, right? Guys like Josh Reynolds or Michael Gallup or whoever, Edelman allows you, based on what I can see so far, to play fewer of those guys, and that's something I'm really interested in.
Anything else like that? I mean, in terms of the Sunday only slate, in terms of quarterback, where do you rank Brady in terms of like cash game viability between Rivers?
Yeah, Brady? I rank him highly. I think the Chargers, when things are going well for the Chargers, they rely on Melvin Gordon. You know, Gordon's got his own question marks, and we'll get to that in a second. But Rivers, you know, sub 30 passing attempts, absolutely on the table here. You go over to Philly and New Orleans, you've got some decent quarterback play, but you're paying an all-time high price for Nick Foles. Granted, it's a good matchup, I think, and I think on DraftKings it's a little bit cheaper. On FanDuel, the relative price is a little cheaper, so you can wind up playing him there. And then Breeze, you know, he's just like, for all the reputation, for as good as the Saints have been, a lot of that can just come down to wanting to hand the ball off or, you know, just not involve him at all. In two of his last four games, Breeze had 8 or fewer fantasy points, right? So his, like, his game script looks a lot more like Lamar Jackson than a guy for that is priced as the most expensive overall quarterback on the slate. So, yeah, I think Brady, at least on that Sunday slate, is in that. It's between him and Foles for me, basically.
Okay, give me your opinion here on Melvin Gordon. I have concerns, but my concern mostly is he was out snapped by Eckler 39-32 last week, and that game. Say what you want about, you know, that the game was getting late and they just didn't need to, like, you know, press on Gordon. I mean, Gordon did get hurt at one point too, so like Gordon had to go back to the locker room, so he missed, like, I think two. I'm trying to remember what that. I want to say he missed two drives total. How concerned are you that he? Let's factor that in. Let's just say it was split, right? Because he didn't miss, like, you know, he didn't miss, you know, an entire half or something like that. But are you concerned at all about that? Would you be willing to go back to Gordon here? Did you see enough? Eckler had 11 rushes and 4 targets. Gordon had 17 attempts and 1 target. Eckler outsnapped him 39-32. How concerned are you with that?
Yeah, I'm a little concerned about it. I, you know, there's no doubt about it. The thing with Gordon, and I guess this is like, it's a corollary with Gurley, where Gordon right now is at his all-time cheapest price on FanDuel, basically, like since he took over the role as the lead running back in LA or San Diego in the old days. He still got ultimately 18 touches in a game, right? Mm-hmm. 18 touches is good. That's like a decent number of touches. We know the plan is to really, really lean on these running backs when things are going well. And we know the plan when the Chargers fall behind is to pass. Last week against the Ravens, it was such a weird game for so many reasons, but because the Chargers, like, the Ravens just couldn't do anything on offense, right? So for the first half, they scored 0 points. They were just totally terrible. The Chargers had 4 scoring drives, and all of them were field goals. That's, I think, pretty uncommon. And like you said, Gordon got banged up and had to exit the game for a period of time. I have to think, I mean, this ultimately comes down to Gordon's health, but again, if you're just looking at other running backs on this slate, you basically got Gordon, you got the New England committee, you got the Philly committee, and you got the New Orleans committee. Right. And so if he's just another guy in the slate that's a part of a committee, that doesn't put him in bad company necessarily. So like the way I rank them right now for the Sunday slate is I like Kamara best. I think I like Gordon after that. And I would rather not play any of the New England guys, especially on FanDuel where you don't get the PPR. And I definitely don't want to play the Philly guys. So you have to play two running backs. Gordon's at an all-time low price against a New England team that was a bottom 5 running defense. I think it's close enough. You want to monitor the health news and all that kind of stuff, but I think it's a reasonable play. And I think you actually kind of quietly take less risk on Gordon than you do on someone like Sony Michel, like you mentioned. You know, like, I don't see how Gordon is a worse play than Michel when he's only a little bit more expensive. And he's also like the clear goal line back, the clear number one of the committee and that kind of thing.
Yeah, I think that's probably, it's just so funny because we have to just couch this all by saying the options are limited, or just limited anyway. And then we have guys like Keenan Allen. Hunter Henry is, I think, cleared to play this week. I need to double check that. I could have sworn I saw no come in. That Hunter Henry would be back. I think that would take, obviously, the Antonio Gates thing. This guy also just hasn't played in more than a year, so I just, you know, take that for what it's worth. But oh no, I take that back. He got hurt in training camp this year. But anyway, he has not played for the entire season. Thoughts real quick. It looks like they're gonna, you know, the Patriots do the shadow coverage thing, and that's just how they roll with wide receivers. They just shadow everybody all across the field, and it kind of, like, as long as you can maybe make reasonable guesses about who's gonna shadow who, that thing is mostly just guesswork. Thoughts on the rest of this Chargers wide receiver core? Maybe knowing that's the case and whether it matters for you or not.
Well, it would matter in terms of if I were wanting to consider Antonio Gates. Gates had 4 targets last week, which doesn't sound like a whole lot, but you have to play a tight end. And
well, hold very, on, but I was mentioning, but with what about Hunter Henry coming back? Like, that doesn't matter.
That's what I'm saying. What I'm saying is, yes, that I don't know if you missed that part where I said, yes, Hunter Henry coming back would kill Gates.
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah, so I would not want to play Gates if Hunter Henry were coming back. And if Hunter Henry were coming back, I think he would be a playable tight end option here. You know, he was the clear kind of tight end number one, was also getting some red zone looks, has 6, 7, 8, 9 target games, and he's under 5,000. So, yeah, I think that's definitely a pretty big impact. But I still think Keenan Allen, I mean, I get that there's a decent case against Keenan Allen at this point. He's got multiple kind of very, very uninspiring weeks. But Keenan Allen's now at, again, an all-time low price. He's 7,100 on FanDuel. on a two-game slate, isn't that just too cheap? I don't know. Like, I'm trying to reconcile in my mind a way where I wind up not playing Keenan Allen at that price tag, given the what I assume to be his floor that he's bringing to the table and the other options. You know, if the Vegas is correct and LA rates to be trailing a little bit, isn't Keenan Allen going to be the main guy? I also think he could have missed out on significant target share last week just because of, again, a very, very strange game where the Chargers just could hand the ball off every play basically without being punished. If they have to pass a little bit, doesn't Allen see 8, 9, 10 targets here?
That seems in the high end to me. He had double digit targets 5 total times this year. And I know some of his targets were buoyed by, he had a 19 target game against Pittsburgh, which like that was much of it was made about, you know, Pittsburgh just, that was more on Pittsburgh than it was on Allen. Like just continue to cover from the linebacker. And like, that's been well talked, well documented. There's an injury kind of mixed in there as well. I'm not willing to pencil him in for like double digit targets here by any means. I just don't think
I don't think you even need to get, my point is I don't think you need to give him double digit targets to make him a good value. Like at 7,100, he's just like basically like the same price as Amari Cooper. I mean, do you have a thought between him and Cooper in terms of who you would trust more going into this week? I don't know. That's actually pretty close to me.
Ooh, yeah, that's close. I might trust Mark Cooper. It's close. I guess I'd be willing to be proven wrong. And I just also think that like there's certain teams like the Patriots that are like, oh, everyone, the Mike Williams and Travis Benjamin, Tyrell Williams of the world can kill us. And it's just not going to be Keenan Allen. Like, I think that they're, I don't know, maybe I'm just transcribing too much of like love for the, not love, too much respect for the Patriots in that sense. But, that'd be my only concern. I'd probably go Cooper and I wouldn't be surprised if I got completely burned by it. All right, let's finish this off with this Eagles and Saints game. Saints are 8-point home favorites. They have, this game is the second highest total, with the Saints come at 51. So that's going to put the Saints at the second highest overall implied points of the week. KC is at 31, right now. The Saints are at 29.5. Interestingly enough, this line started at minus 10 for the Saints and is down to minus 8. So fell with the points coming up on, I guess, more respect on the Philly offensive side. I kind of think that Kamara might just be the best running back play of the whole weekend. Like, I don't know. Maybe I'm just not even going on a limb by saying that. But, in terms of the Kamara, Gurley, Zeke group, which I think that's just the group of like of very expensive running backs, where would you rank Kamara in that group if you were to like maybe tier those three guys? The prices are all essentially the same on them,
right? Yeah, and I'll take Kamara. I think he's like very similar to Zeke in this regard, and that he's going to be involved no matter what. An explosive playmaker, great goal line option, 18 total touchdowns on the season. He kind of does it all, and I think he's got the great matchup. And you know, kind of unlike Zeke, he also got the favorable game script that at least Vegas forecasts here. So, yeah, I'm going to play Kamara certainly on the Sunday slate, and I'm going to heavily consider him for this all-weekend slate as well.
I did look back to see what the Saints did in terms of their first couple rounds of the playoffs. I hit the wrong query here, the wrong year. I had it up in front of me. So I did look at what the Saints did last year for the playoffs. I'm just looking at a list of their touches. I don't remember who they played, but Kamara outsnapped Ingram 37-27. So it was very much a timeshare to start the playoffs last year. It got a little bit more in favor of Kamara in the second week, where he outsnapped Ingram 45-27. So it doesn't, like, you know, kind of my mind was like, oh man, you know, come playoff time, they'll just be all Kamara because that's the plan. But that really wasn't the case last season. In terms of just overall touches, where do you think we want to put Kamara in terms of opportunity? I can let you know where we have him now, but I have him at 15-6. Does that seem strike you on the high end, or does that seem like a reasonable kind of idea of where the Saints are going to go with their offense this week?
That seems fair to me. I think you could see it even go higher. Kamara averaged more than 6 targets in his last 4 games, but he averaged fewer than 15 carries in those 2. So, you know, I might even bump the targets up a little bit and ding down the rushing attempts. But, yeah, it's certainly in the ballpark.
And then we talked briefly here about Thomas. He seems like he's basically their only option. We did see a decent games out of Ted Ginn over the last couple, like maybe the last week of the season. Would he be a reasonable wide receiver 2 option for you? They've had these other guys like Traquan Smith and Kirkwood, and guys have kind of thrown in over the course of the season because of some injury stuff and just spreading the ball around. But anything else to consider on the New Orleans side?
Yeah, I think Ginn is a funny one. I think he's generally off people's radars because he was more involved in the offense early in the season, basically took the whole season off, and then before reappearing for 1 game against Pittsburgh. I wouldn't be shocked to see Ginn disappear on us again, but again, if I'm comparing him to these other dirt cheap, you know, sub $6,000 wide receivers, I actually think on the games that he actually played, his track record is better than these other guys. And it really helps that we have the one game to point to against Pittsburgh where he came back and was very, very solid with 8 targets, 5 catches for 74 yards. So, yeah, I like Ginn. I think, again, mostly you're playing Ginn, so we're clear, to enable other good plays elsewhere, but that's just good enough this week.
Yeah, and I think actually I like it that he was actually deactivated that last week of the season, because that just means that he is part of like their plan going their plan going forward. I think sometimes you take, like, you know, when is an inactive makes sense to play, but like that was, he was part of their, he's like, oh, you're just gonna be, you're our wide receiver too going into the playoffs, right? So I take that as a very good sign. Let's finish off here on the Eagles side. Obviously Nick Foles stepped up in a big way. Once again, this guy's just kind of, it's kind of unbelievable what this guy's done at this point, in terms of a guy that was essentially a career backup and really nothing more, and kind of just like came out of quasi-forced retirement, and now is, you know, has already won a Super Bowl and just pulled off just an unbelievable upset victory over the
heading
Bears.
For two right now. As of this podcast, he's heading for two Super Bowls.
I mean, it's crazy. He threw the ball 40 times last week. Do you see him just them being just in another sort of pass happy game because it's against the Saints? Saints had a good defense this year, so it's not like they're, but sort of the, I mean, God, the Saints have a good defense. The Bears were like the best defense by, I don't know, by
well,
by
Foles, and to be clear, Foles was bad against the Bears too. So, you know, the, if this is a tough one to evaluate on some level, I think that the real question for me on Foles is, it's just so hard to pin down exactly what the price should be on this guy, right? Because he has been a totally different quarterback basically in these huge playoff games or the must wins than he is, like, you know, they started with him at the beginning of the season and he sucked, right? So I don't know exactly, and he's been bad for most of his career, so I don't know what the sample size is I need on Foles before I consider him at like almost $8,000. It kind of seems like a lot, and the Saints, you know, for all of the successes that they've had defensively, especially in comparison with previous years, they still did allow the fourth most yards per attempt through the air, right? So again, if you're just comparing apples to apples and putting them up against other defenses this weekend, they are significantly worse than most of the passing defenses that are going this weekend. And especially on this slate, you got New England, who's top five in terms of yards per attempt allowed. You got the Chargers, who are top 10, and Philly, who's in the top half of the league. And then you have the Saints, who are bottom four, right? So I think Foles, for me, unequivocally has the best passing matchup of the weekend. And I think the price is affordable enough that you can consider him on FanDuel. And I just don't know if it's going to feel good or not. So that's kind of where I am right now. I could play him. If he showed up, I wouldn't be upset. But I'm also not trying to prioritize him.
And then the rest of these Philly position players, the Josh Adams thing wasn't so much fun while it lasted. That seems over. He had one snap last week against the Bears, so he's off the table. Sproles ended up out-snapping Smallwood 38-28. That part of that maybe is because they were playing from behind, but he also out-carried him 13-8. They saw the same amount of targets. Sproles just a cash game play going into this week. He's very cheap on DraftKings. He's 4,400. The guy did touch the ball 16 times last week.
Yeah.
Judging that they're probably going to be playing from behind again, I'm tempted to say at 4,400 on a small slate like this. Okay, I'll put it this way: would you rather play Sproles or Sony Michel? 4,700 on Michel, in by the way, in PPR, where Sony Michel does not catch any passes. Would you rather?
I'd rather play Sony Michel, I think.
Really? Oh, it's, I think I'd rather play Sproles.
It's close. I mean, Michel, I think Michel's role is more secure, if that makes sense. Like, the fact that Sproles' value in the past has become, or come from, being the only target guy in Philly, and the fact that he split targets with Smallwood is actually a little bit concerning to me. He was also just complete dog crap on the carries he got. Sure. I mean, 21 carries on 13, or 21 yards on 13 carries is awful. So the times where they just get away from Sproles altogether, I think, are more often than the times the Patriots get away from Michel. So I think there's more upside. He could catch 8 balls. Like, that wouldn't shock anybody, but in terms of just strict high floor, just looking to kind of get away from this position cheaply, safety, I like Michel better.
Yeah, I think I'll take a bet with you off the air. We can do like a side bet on, I'll take Sproles over Michel, I think. Even assuming, not even price independent, I think, you know, I'm
really, tough guy.
I'm trying to be tough. I'm just saying. Just make it. I
get it, dude. You're tough.
At this point, we do have Sony Michel projected for more. Some of that's like the touchdown equity you're getting from him that maybe is going to leapfrog somewhat over the, and the fact that you're getting a ding on running back carries on Sproles, knowing that they're just such big underdogs. I think I'd still take the Sproles route and I wouldn't feel like amazingly confident about it, but I think it goes Sproles. In terms of targets, we saw Foles did spread the ball around. Alshon Jeffery had 9. Tate had 8, though had significantly fewer snaps than these other guys. Ertz had 7. Aguilar had 6. The Alshon, Ertz, and Aguilar crew were basically all over 60 snaps, and then Tate was clearly the next option up with only 42 snaps. Tiering these guys in a game where they could be coming from behind, do you want to put these Tate targets on par, like from week over week, knowing that he wasn't on the field as much? Like, how do you feel about this pass catching core for the Eagles?
Yeah, I feel a little bit concerned about it. Like when I see a Foles getting 40 passing attempts, but no one getting more than 10 targets, I start to wonder a little bit about, like, you know, are they just being a good offense and spreading the ball around and being unpredictable? Like, especially guys like Nelson Aguilar, like 6 targets for him, I would not count on going forward. I also think, I don't know, I really like Ertz. I think Ertz is still probably the safest tight end of the weekend, whatever happened last week, notwithstanding. And both Jeffery and Tate would give me pause. Like, either of those guys are people I could see just only catching 3 balls this week if it just doesn't happen to be working. So I think they're playable. I think there's a really interesting big tournament stack here, like going Foles +1. And for cash, it's just, you know, again, you're having to compare these guys against people like Julian Edelman or Keenan Allen that just have more defined roles on their teams and longer track records.
Yeah, I think where you're getting into the big question marks is on DraftKings, where they're kind of daring you to play these wide receivers because guys like Tate is, yeah, Aguilar's 4,300. So you're getting down to the bottom of the barrel there in terms of price. Tate is 4,600 as opposed to like Keenan Allen, who's 2,000 more, right? Or even Alshon Jeffery, who's $1,400 to $1,500 more at 6,100. I think that's where the question really becomes, is in this PPR format, are you getting, is 7 targets here enough for a guy like Aguilar, 4,300? It's pretty close. It's not a lock kind of thing, but knowing that kind of savings where you're going to maybe want to, you know, if you're going to want to make sure you prioritize guys like Kamara and Edelman, or maybe you want to prioritize Kamara, Edelman, and Thomas. And then the way to do that is to then maybe get away from a Keenan Allen and go some of these Philly cheaper wide receivers. I think that's going to be an interesting math question, or even just Ertz. Like, you know, that's what's going to afford you the ability to get Ertz. So I think there are a few closer decisions on Sunday than there are on Saturday. Saturday seems pretty clear to me, and you can go check out what our projection system is kind of spitting out right now by going to dfsr.com/deals, and that will get you, the podcast listener, a free 7-day trial to our projection system powered by our good friends over at Lineup Lab. Optimal lineups for FanDuel, DraftKings, NFL, NBA is included in that, and so is NHL. It's all covered under one subscription package. So go find a better deal than that in the industry. I do not think you will. We do it all under one sub, and we're really proud of the way we do it. So go check it out, dfsr.com/deals. Buddy, enjoy a divisional round in football. I'll talk to you next week.
Peace.